Hello and good morning. If you're visiting with us today, we're especially excited that you've made time to be with us. You can stay in Matthew chapter 5. We'll be looking more into Jesus' Sermon on the Mount today. We'll be spending a little bit of time in Job as well. Thank you, Adam. Because some of the lessons that Jesus has to teach for us, one of the main thrusts of the book of Matthew is Jesus is the Son of God, the Son of David, the Messiah. And what he comes to teach really is nothing new. It's only new in the sense that it had been obscured by lots of religious stuff and cultural things and lots of distractions. But some of the habits for fulfilling relationships that Jesus comes to preach were things practiced by Job. Job's an old book. He was embodying these truths hundreds of years before Jesus reemphasized them. From the beginning, okay, from Genesis, right? God the Father created man, and he created us so that our deepest emotional, physical, spiritual needs would be met, not based upon what we decide, but within the boundaries of healthy, godly relationships. We all have relationships, and even outside of the church, everyone has relationships, right? But they can be confusing. We can get ourselves into trouble. Jesus comes to preach and to show God's intention from the beginning. Matthew chapter 5. Jesus authoritatively here, I don't know if you caught what Isaac read for us there, but he goes, all right. I guess you're not seeing what I'm seeing. It's what the IT department would refer to as the blue screen of death. All you get to see is the black screen. You don't know any different. But we'll be all right. I'll just go on without it. How's that sound? So there's this, and I don't want to turn this into, you know, it's the world against us, because culture and world and even religion sometimes has these little mantras about, you know, relationships and how to do relationships. And Jesus comes and he says, you've heard it said. He says, I don't care where you've heard it said from, but you've heard it said this way. But I tell you God's eternal truth. Jesus authoritatively contrasts the world and religion and what they all say that God says, right? Because religion says, here's what God says, and the world says, here's what God says. But Jesus comes and he says, I am the Son of God. This is really what God intended. He shows us the heart of God. It's the heart of God. So what eternal truths exist for healthy relationships? What kind of eternal truths exist for how we approach intimacy, right? How often or how able are we to talk about issues of intimacy and those kind of things? Well, I'm kind of a glutton for punishment. Now, this is a rhetorical question, right? It's supposed to spark thought in your mind, so I'm not looking for a response. But is there anyone here who just loved being a preteen adult? Man, I wish I could go back to middle school. And I know some people that, you know, high school was their glory days, right? Uncle Rico, those kind of types where, you know, you did some awesome things in high school. And maybe legitimately you did. But do you know anyone who's like, no, go back a couple years. Junior high was my heyday. And then there was that class that those of you who were in public school had to take, right? Middle school sex ed, they called it health. I mean, what Jesus says about gouging out an eye, you'd rather gouge your eyes out than have to sit through that class again. When I was back in Texas, we lived in Dawson County, and we had sort of the dubious distinction as being the county who had the highest rate, the highest rate of teen pregnancy in all of Texas. Now, I'm not saying that that's a label that condemns you to anything, but that is a difficult place to be in, a preteen or a teenager, and you're pregnant and you're unmarried and life is before you. And part of the reason we had gotten into that difficulty is because there was just silence about intimacy and issues of sex and how we relate to each other. I mean, really, the only thing that we would communicate is that age-old phrase, just don't do it, whatever it is, right? And I closed my eyes and my ears during middle school health class, so I still don't know what it is, right? Don't do it. Well, what is it? And so a glutton for punishment I was, they said, well, let's send the youth minister into the schools, right? And let him teach on abstinence. So we went in because, you know, maybe back in the 50s we could get away, or I just came to mind. But sometime in the past, my parents and parents before then, you could get away with not talking about these things because morals was just, you know, part of being an American and part of being someone here was there was just morals that were inside of us, and you could get away with not talking about those things. But it's a guarantee today that if we as the church and Christian parents and Christian mentors don't have some kind of positive, healthy message, then the world is going to fill in that message. And I'm not sure we want that message. And so Jesus comes onto the scene. He says, you've heard a lot of stuff said about intimacy, but I tell you, here's the truth. That's what I want to look at today. No, that's all right. I'll leave it. We see Jesus giving us the timeless heart of God. Now remember, Jesus comes. Who does he come to here in Matthew? Matthew was a disciple, and he wrote this book in Hebrew first, and it was written to the Jews first. And so there's something, you know, this higher standard of morality, of intimacy, that we want to hold ourselves to. Okay, Jesus comes first to the Jews. And then this book goes first to the Christians, right? Because there's something different about those middle school kids I went into the school to teach. And us today, we have come to God. Those of us who are Christians in this audience, we have come to God, and in baptism and repentance, we have submitted to Him, and we have said, God, I want your higher standard of authority. Right? That's what the essence of covenant is. It's an agreement between God and between us to come together to live according to a higher standard of morality. Now, God will judge the world for the sins that they commit. But I don't want this lesson to turn into we've got it right and the world's got it wrong. Because purity is not a prerequisite to the kingdom, is it? You have to get your life cleaned up before you can become a Christian. Is that what we learn and are taught? Hold your finger in Matthew 5 and look over to 1 Corinthians 5. It's a nice little matching chapter there. Paul takes these issues of intimacy very seriously, but he doesn't single it out as the only thing we can struggle with. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 9. I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people. Not at all meaning the sexually immoral of this world, or the greedy and swindlers, or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. But I am writing to you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of brother, if he is guilty of these things. This message that Jesus came to give, it's for us, because we have come to Him saying we want a higher standard. We want to call people to a higher standard, but don't take this and go condemn the world for a standard they have not yet agreed to adhere to. Jesus comes first to the Jews. We understand that the first relationship, really, the relationship that defines everything else, is our relationship with God. Matthew 5:16. In the same way, let your light shine before others. Why? So that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father that is in heaven. There's the predominant sentiment that intimacy or those kind of things should define how happy your life is, or they should define your relationships. And our challenge is to help people see you start with God, and it's your relationship with God that defines your worth. You remember the story of Job? I had brought him up earlier. Back in Job chapter 1, and then at the end of the book, God is the reason for every good thing in Job's life. And that's really the lesson that Job is pushed to learn. He's a moral man, he's a good man, but he has to learn that God is the source of everything. He's the reason he has anything that he has. We're first defined by our relationship with God. Therefore, our approach to life, our approach to people, our approach to sexuality, all has to do with approaching it with the heart of God. And so to those of us, to the Jews, to us as Christians who have accepted a higher moral standard, what must our steady and clear voice, what must we teach about these issues? Well, first of all, healthy boundaries lead to healthy intimacy in relationships. If we're defined by God, if something is defined, then it defines the boundaries of that thing. Let's read Matthew 5, verse 27 again. You've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. You've heard it said, don't commit adultery. I mean, some things never change, right? What's that the equivalent of saying? Just don't do it, right? In all of your relationships, you can have a healthy relationship if you just don't do it. Now, think for a moment with me. First of all, it's terrible advice for married couples, right? This is your limiting definition here. Just don't do it. If it is sex, right? Is that a good advice for married couples? What are they saying here? The leaders, this was all that they had to say about intimacy. Just stay away from this one thing and you'll be fine. The leaders left the impression that as long as there was no adultery, then that would be adequate for a fulfilling relationship. But think with me, if that's the only rule that we put out there, if everything else leading up to that consummate act is okay, then what a fearful world we would live in. If that's the only teaching that religion has to offer on intimacy, wouldn't it be a frightening world to live in? I mean, it is a frightening world to live in, right? When that's the only thing that you're not supposed to approach. But we're talking about the heart of God here, a loving God, a wise God, who gives us boundaries. And he gives us more boundaries than just don't do this one thing. He says, I have an approach to relationships because I care about every aspect of a relationship. Let's look at what he says here in verse 27. I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent in his heart has already committed adultery with her in his heart. How does he start out there? You say this is just a problem for men? This is just a problem for middle school boys, right? What does he say? He says, everyone. Maybe in some of your older translations it says, whosoever. Whosoever. There's some other connotations there in other passages, right? Whosoever believes and is baptized shall be saved, right? This is a message for everyone. Intimacy has implications for men and for women and for children and for all kinds of people. And so he doesn't just pin this on the leaders, on the men who are running this society. He says everyone is involved in the choices that we make when we approach issues of intimacy. Boy, I tell you, some of those teenage girls in Texas, they really felt how prevalent their decisions impacted other people. A choice they made in one moment suddenly affected their family, the rest of their life, this precious child that was going to be born to them. It was quite a wake-up call that their choices not only affected them, but everyone else. Think about the boundary that the Pharisees had established. They said, you can go as far until you engage in the consummate act of intimacy, right? The act of marriage, of the act of sex. Where does Jesus move that boundary? He has a lot more to say than just don't do it. He goes all the way back, and this might seem absurd to us, but I say to you, everyone who looks. Now think about that. Intimacy starts with a look. Man, and this is what God has been trying to teach us since Genesis. Job 31, verse 1. Job would echo the words of Christ. Job is contemplating his own morality, and he's going through all these things. He's like, I've been good in giving to widows and seeing after the fatherless, and I've been kind to my enemies, and I've done these things. But he starts it out with, I have made a covenant with my eyes. I've made an agreement between my mind and my eyes not to look lustfully at a woman. That's Job. That's thousands of years ago. And he says, my boundary for intimacy isn't just staying away from this one act. It begins with my eyes and my mind. You know, Jesus goes into some gory things about ripping your eye out and chopping your hand off, right? And it's this overstatement. But the organ of sin is not our mind or our eyes, but it's our brain. I could gouge one eye out and I could still gaze lustfully with the other eye and continue to sin in my mind, right? I could still commit acts of sin with other parts of my body. It starts with your eyes and with your mind. But it also reveals that intimacy, it's a process, right? It's not just one final act, but it's a process that begins with a look and maybe continues in conversation and affection and a glance and a touch. It's a building process that bonds you to someone. And of course, the farther you go, the more firmly it bonds to someone. But, you know, there's only certain people that you share certain acts with, right? There's only certain things that you share, and you share it with them because it bonds you to that person. A holding of the hand, or a kiss, or a hug. They seem innocent, but they're the beginning of a powerful bonding process that intimacy is. That's why Jesus says, start with what you look at. Because as it proceeds from there, you're developing a tighter emotional bond with that person. It's not merely about what you do to someone, but it's how you look at them and how you think about them. This is the great lie that pornography tells us. It takes this person who in reality is a parent or a sibling or a spouse or a child. I mean, this is a real person. And it shows it to you as an image and it says, just look at that and treat that however you want in your mind. That's an object and you can use it for your own pleasure and your own enjoyment. And God looks at that and says, that's one of my children. And I wish they weren't exposing themselves like that, but that's one of my children. Everyone deals with this kind of stuff. Our intimacy, the process, begins with looks. And then Jesus defines the look for us, right? It's so difficult today. I'm not kidding you. As I was getting this lesson ready, right? I'm a hip millennial, right? So I have Twitter and Facebook and all those kind of things, right? I'm pretty cool. And I found this sports commentator that I started to follow on Twitter, and I don't know how it happened, but I'm not kidding. The day after I did that, something was triggered in the cyber world out there that on Twitter, you can kind of friend people on Twitter like you can on Facebook. I started getting all of these fake accounts of women who were barely dressed. And I was like, what? I was like, Jenny, what? I just need you to know. I did not go here. But all I'm trying to do is follow this guy who's a sports commentator. And I kid you not, these images are suddenly invading the privacy of my phone, which really isn't so private after all, right? It's not so private. And so what do you do? Have I stumbled and I've fallen because I looked on that thing that very invasively shoved its way into my life? No, Jesus is saying there's no guilt for passing glances, right? Because it's really difficult to get away from some of the thoughts and the images that just pervade our culture today. But as a fire, you know, that burns and kicks off sparks, if that spark goes off and it dies, then it's done no harm. But if that spark comes into your life and you gaze at it and you start to fan it into flame and you start to think about that more, when a look and a glance becomes lust and longing and imagined action, it's at that point where we must be led to godly sorrow that leads to repentance. I mean, we all struggle with this, and the point is not to struggle with it and feel so guilty that you feel like, well, there's no hope. You got to capture that thought and that glance as soon as it hits you, because remember, anything beyond a look is starting to create an emotional bond with that thing. And you got to stop it before it turns into something more lustful. We need to be educated about these kind of things, right? We need to add weight to our cyber journeys, right? When I look at that thing on my phone, it seems sort of trite and it seems like nothing. But I make it significant when I take it to my spouse and I say, look at this. I want you to know this is what I have encountered and I'd like some help with this, right? Suddenly it's significant and I'm not just struggling with this on my own. And so Jesus steps onto the scene and he opposes the whole, you know, corruption that says everything you need to know about sex can be summed up in just don't do it. And Jesus says, it starts with how you look at things. It's the heart of God. God cares about how we look at one another, how we treat one another, how we think about one another. Jesus and Job offer us godly boundaries leading to fulfillment. You know, it's only the immature person who says, I don't need any rules to be happy with my life. It's the mature person who sets up boundaries that lead to fulfillment and joy and peace. I'd like to leave you with three thoughts about ways that we can construct some boundaries that lead to fulfilling relationships. And the first one really here ties in with, let's go to verse 29. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away, for it's better that you lose one of your members than your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away, for it's better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. Okay? Jesus says that establishing these boundaries is something you have to do no matter the cost. No matter the cost, we have to set up protections and defense for ourselves. We need boundaries. And so the first place I'd like to think about here is make specific boundaries. They're a lot more effective than generic ones, right? Isn't that one thing that Jesus tells us? The Pharisees were incredibly generic in their boundary, and Jesus takes us all the way back to sight, which is very specific. Now, it requires work, but boundaries and responsibility is a price worth paying for healthy relationships. You know, you go out and we understand that, or some of us understand that when we shop. You can get what you want now and then pay it off on your credit card for the rest of your life. Or you can save and be smart and get it when you're able to. And then you can enjoy it without any obligation or fear. Sometimes it's hard for us to think about boundaries outside of a marriage relationship, right? What about our young people? What about single people? How far is too far? Where's the line? But we don't really have that kind of a difficulty when we're thinking about marriage boundaries, right? Think for a moment here. So there's a mother who's married, and she's a working mother, right? And so she goes to work, and she has to spend time with her boss, who's a man. He's young. He's charismatic, right? He's the CEO. But she has to spend time with him because they're working on a project together. And so they're spending time. You know, they have to have face-to-face interaction, and they have to communicate. Those of you in the job world know that can't looks be taken the wrong way? Can't conversation be taken the wrong way? So would it be okay for this married mother, you walk in and she's holding hands with the boss? Is that okay? We have anyone who says that? I mean, you know, we could go on down the line and talk about all kinds of sexual contact, right? But just start with the innocent stuff. Holding hands is a clear boundary that we would expect a married working woman to respect. And so we know how to establish boundaries. I'm not saying in dating that you've gone too far if you've held hands. It's for you to decide, and it's for you to work out how far is too far. But no, it begins with how you look at each other. It begins there. Don't start, because that's really the next thing. Boundaries are much easier to build than they are to rebuild. And that's one reason I went into the school. You know, you can get abstinence right, but if you don't have Jesus, you don't have salvation. But we were talking to these young people because if you can establish a boundary early in your life, many of us know as adults, you know how much damage you can do if you don't establish those boundaries. And you have these patterns and ways of thinking and approaching things that plague you until you deal with those things effectively. Boundaries are worth the work. They are easier to build up front than they are to rebuild later. It helps if we bring God into the situation, right? If you're in an uncomfortable dating situation, maybe this is you, or maybe you're a parent who's, you know, giving advice on this kind of thing. Stop and pray. If you ever get to a point to where this is getting out of control, or I'm not sure where this is going, if you can stop and you can pray and bring God into the scenario and everything's still okay, then you're probably okay. But if you think, boy, I would sure hate for God to be in on what's going on now, then you better run. If you're with somebody and you can't stop and pray, you better go, because you've moved past a look. You've moved past a touch. You're getting to a place where you're bonding with someone that, you know, maybe you won't marry that person. You sure would like them to be better off for knowing you than for you to be a regret that they had later on. Now, we have to keep in mind, you know, 1 John 1, we don't walk around pretending that we haven't sinned, okay? God says, if you say you haven't sinned, I know you have sinned. You got to confess. And so anytime when we struggle and we stumble with these things, maybe we stop and maybe we prayed, but maybe we need to add repentance on to the end of that, right? We're not here to judge and say, you've gone too far. This isn't the unforgivable sin, okay? This isn't the unforgivable sin. Maybe someday I'll preach on that as soon as I find out what that is, okay? There's repentance and forgiveness and healing in all of these things. You're surfing on the internet. You're tempted by some kind of fantasy. Bring God into the equation. Make specific boundaries. This is the next one. Wake up to our need for acceptance and attention. This goes back to healthy relationships fulfilling our emotional needs. There's a story about teen boys who had their phones and they were sending explicit text messages, right, to girls, and you think, well, they're just trying to hook up, right? Well, the researchers, you know, interviewed these boys, and these boys weren't just trying to hurt somebody. They were hiding behind technology because they were lonely, and they weren't accepted, and they used technology as this seemingly safe way to reach out and get someone's attention, you know? Did they need to be reprimanded harshly? I think they needed someone to talk to them, to tell them, hey, you're feeling lonely and you need acceptance. And I think we all, if you're especially struggling with these issues of intimacy, don't hide behind technology. Talk with someone. Don't be so buried in your phones and your computers that you can't engage. We all have a need for acceptance and attention and non-sexual affection. That's why God has given us healthy relationships to meet these needs. And finally, I've already spoken to some of this, but, you know, like with my Twitter encounter, you got to add something significant. You got to add weight to these weightless cyber encounters that we have. You got to talk with somebody about the things that you watch. We have to talk about the movies and the shows that we watch. We have to ask each other what we think the message is being imparted to us. You know, if Jesus was watching some of our TV today, he would say, this is what they're telling you. But I tell you, this is the truth. Man, aren't the messages of the media about sexuality just pervasive? And sometimes we don't even realize it. But we got to talk about those things. We have to take teachable moments and turn them into opportunities to glorify God. So what have I tried to say today? First of all, our challenge is to help people define their worth according to God. We no longer live in a time where sexual morals are simply understood. It's things we have to learn how to communicate in a modest, appropriate way. And I pray that the church would have a clear and steady voice about God's boundaries, but also what God promises, the beauty of our relationships. Next week, we're going to get into Matthew 5 and Matthew 19. God is really excited about marriage. God is really excited about those people who dedicate themselves to the service of God, whether they're married or not. That's some of what he says in Matthew 19. God wants us to live full, healthy and fulfilled lives, and he's provided a way for us to do that. And it's been this way from the beginning. And so let's have a strong voice. Let's have a listening ear. And let's strive to help each other in this sensitive area. And maybe if we do a better job, right, they won't have to send me back into the school to middle school sex ed class, right? I thank you for your attention. I thank you for this opportunity to speak on this important issue. If there's a need that you have that the church can provide for you, we sure would love to help and talk with you. If you'd like to get to know this God that we talk about, if you'd like to reunite yourself with the church, there's opportunities to do that. Come forward while we stand and sing.